Welcome to this RCGP podcast on heavy menstrual bleeding, abbreviated to HMB. I'm Dr. Tony Hazel, a GP with an interest in women's health, and today I'll be interviewing Dr. Anne Connolly. Anne is a gypsy in gynaecology and the RCGP Women's Health Champion. She's leading on the development of the Women's Health Toolkit, which includes relevant learning materials and resources to help primary care clinicians optimise the care provided, particularly for patients experiencing menstrual concerns. She's also chair of the Primary Care Women's Health Forum, which seeks to share best practice and provide training in women's health issues to those working in primary care. Thanks for your time today, Anne.
You're welcome, Tony.
So in this podcast, we're going to be discussing the important concern of heavy menstrual bleeding and why this needs to be managed well by us in primary care. Why is this such an important issue for women?
So it's a really great question. You know, it's a very common problem. It affects a significant number of women. And actually, there's an estimate of 3.5 million work days lost per annum in the UK because of heavy menstrual bleeding. The problem with heavy menstrual bleeding is that often it just develops gradually. So women don't suddenly one month think, oh, that's a really heavy period, so they come to us. But periods will gradually often get heavier over quite a long time. So what is it that actually drives the woman on that day to come and present to us with heavy bleeding? And it's often because they've either got physical symptoms, they're gradually becoming more anemic. And if you have heavy bleeding over each month, you don't quite get back to the previous hemoglobin. So you gradually become anemic. But also, you know, another thing that might drive women to make the call is that they may have had an awful episode of flooding at work. And I don't know if you can imagine being a teacher or being working in a supermarket and worrying each month that you're going to flood while you're in the workplace and you haven't got time to go to the toilet. So, you know, there's a big social and work impact and psychological impact as well as the physical concerns. And then some women also, it will impact on their sex life and their other aspects of life. So it's about encouraging women to present to us earlier, and because we've got such good ways of helping. But it's also about us understanding that it's not just a physical problem, but it's also got this psychological and social impact as well, just like NICE tell us.
Absolutely. I completely agree. These are the sorts of things that women come in and discuss with us. So what particular causes would be uppermost in your mind when you're seeing a patient?
So for many women, this will just be dysfunctional uterine bleeding, but that has to be a diagnosis of exclusion. So we have to have made sure there aren't other issues causing it before we can say it's you and your hormones. When I'm talking to women, I need to be thinking, have you got a bleeding problem, a clotting deficiency? And that would be women who have had a lifelong problem. So it doesn't start later on unless suddenly they've gone on to some anticoagulant therapy. But the history of a lifelong problem of bleeding problems linked in with extra bruising, nosebleed, maybe even a postpartum hemorrhage, then that we'd think about, have they got a clotting problem and do I need to talk to haematology? Otherwise, it's really about, do I think they've got a structural problem such as large fibroids? So then I might talk to them, have you noticed a lump? Have you felt pressure in your pelvis? Are you having more problems with, say, increased frequency of going to the toilet past urine? You know, so I might think, have they got a structural problem, in which case I'll need to think about how I investigate that. Or do I think they've got a histological problem? So do I think they might have endometrial hyperplasia or endometrial cancer or some endometrial polyp? And so then I have to know, what is it that risks women of having those problems? And that is usually things like obesity is the big one. Polycystic ovary syndrome is another one. Diabetes, if they've been inadvertently given estrogen only HRT. Because the way you think about what the most likely cause would be means you either need to investigate first and then it directs how you investigate, or then otherwise, if we don't think there's either of those types of problems going on, then we can just sort of start to treat in primary care.
So you've touched a bit, obviously, in terms of thinking about what diagnosis you might make. You've touched a little bit on some of the symptoms. What other symptoms or patterns might you be looking for and specifically asking about?
So again, like, it's personalised. We've got to just go through the history. We've got to very carefully listen to what the woman's telling us. And if we don't understand it or we're not sure, then we must go back over it again. So first we need to think about the impact and give her that support. We need to be thinking about, does she have an abnormal pattern to the bleeding? So is she getting very infrequent but then very heavy bleeds? Or is she getting any intermenstrual bleeding? Because if she's getting intermenstrual bleeding, then we need to be thinking about investigating that differently. Are there any other additional factors like post-coital bleeding? Has she got an STI risk? And is there any change to a vaginal discharge? So we need to be asking all those questions so we can clearly understand what the pattern of bleeding is looking like. Thinking again, just reminding us, we're going to think, has it been lifelong? Does she have pressure symptoms? Does she have pain? And those other comorbidities. So they're the, you know, clearly need to be thinking down that line, taking a careful history, just like we do when we're looking at any subject a woman or a man is talking to us about.
So you've taken the history and you've maybe at this point got a bit of an idea about what you think might be going on. Does everyone need to be examined and does everyone need a scan?
Definitely not. And it's a great question again, because we often just think, oh, we need to put a speculum examination on every woman and then we need to do a scan or we need to do some investigations. But actually, in the NICE guidance, it clearly talks to us about making that assessment, thinking logically about what I think the problem is, because then that will direct the most relevant investigation that we should be doing. So I would do a full blood count on all, and I think that's really important because we've talked about this insidious onset of anemia. Then we need to consider things like, does she need a pregnancy test? Do I need to do an STI screen? If she's not up to date with her smear or she's had previous problems with her smear, then I need to be doing a speculum examination to check the cervix, because if that's the cause of the bleeding, then she'll need obviously to go off to colposcopy and not to other investigations. But then I think about, if I think she's got pressure symptoms, so she might have a structural problem, then a scan is the best way of investigating that. If I think there's some intermenstrual bleeding or some problem with the endometrium, and I've done that on my risk assessment and thought about diabetes, obesity, etc., then actually a hysteroscopy is a much better way of assessing the endometrium than an ultrasound is. So it's a logical approach. Majority of women, other than the full blood count, they don't need any investigations. But if they do, is it straight for a scan? Is it straight for a hysteroscopy? And then it's a much more logical way of doing that.
And would you treat at the start, let's say you are going to arrange a scan or a hysteroscopy or something, would you treat at the start or are you waiting for the results to come back?
Again, it's a great question and it's really important we get some treatment in early, because she may already have been missing quite a lot of time off work or school or just life. So getting some treatment in early at the first visit while we're waiting for the test is really good practice. Giving her a decent dose of something like tranexamic acid on that first appointment. And when I'm talking about a gram QDS or 1.5 grams TDS, and taking that for those next couple of months while she's waiting for any investigations to be done is a good idea. But if she doesn't need any tests, then NICE clearly tell us the treatments we should be thinking about are hormonal. So that can be the intrauterine system is the most effective way of doing that. If not, and she's fit and healthy, the combined oral contraceptives are also very good. Or we could use long cyclical progestogens. If she doesn't want hormones, then we're thinking about tranexamic acid is the best of the non-hormonal options. Or is she wanting surgery? But we need to give her those bits of information so she can make her own choice. And when we're talking about surgery, we're talking about low intervention surgery. So we're talking about endometrial ablation, where the lining of the uterus is burnt off, with hysterectomy only being left sort of to the last resort these days.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Women often think that surgery automatically means hysterectomy, and that's not the case anymore. So if we're taking a good look at ourselves in primary care, what could we do better?
So as ever, it's about supporting women's education, signposting, knowing where the good resources are online so that women can go and find the information they need to make the choices that they want to make about their own lives, basically. Workplace should do better about supporting women with period problems. And if we can offer help with that with a letter or something explaining why a woman has to keep going to the toilet all the time, if that's what she wants, because sometimes there's real pressure at work that women don't leave their station or whatever it is to go off to the toilet. We need to have a better appreciation of the, not just the physical, but also the psychological and social impact of heavy menstrual bleeding on women's lives. We need to have a streamlined approach to the pathway so that we understand full blood count in all and then the relevance of the tests, if they are necessary at all. And then the majority of care we can be offering close to home. So fitting into uterine systems in your workplace or in a local practice is really good practice because it saves costs, increases access, and is good quality care.
So in summary, what are the most important points to take home from this?
As I just said, really, it's a heavy menstrual bleeding is very common and it has such a significant impact on the quality of life of many women that we just must appreciate that. And women must be empowered to come and tell us about it earlier on. There is brilliant guidance out there. There are brilliant resources out there that we can signpost people to and to understand about not doing unnecessary investigations when we don't need to. And as ever, it's that personalised approach. And if one pathway, one treatment doesn't work first time, then you know, in primary care we can see women again and we can give them other information and give them ongoing support.
Thank you very much, Anne. That has been really useful. Thank you for listening to this RCGP podcast, and please do join us for the other three podcasts in the series. For more information and resources, please visit the Women's Health Hub at rcgp.org.uk/women's-health. And I'd like to say a big thank you to Endometriosis UK for their support.